Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I am your host, Preston Schlankhofer, coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center, deep within the Civil Defense Radio bunker. If you've been breathing over the past 2+ years, you have probably experienced some degradation of your rights to movement, rights to assemble, work, and even speak your mind without being censored, vilified, or banned for talking about something that isn't the official narrative. Our guest today has experienced this as well, but he did something about it. He fought back. Our guest this episode is Matt Strickland. He is a veteran of the 25th Infantry Division and a former military contractor. Today, he is a husband, father, and small business owner, which is where the story of his life gets more interesting. Matt Strickland, welcome to Civil Defense Radio.
Hey, thank you, buddy. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Hey, if you want, can you give us a little more insight into your background and what you're doing today?
Yeah, absolutely. So I joined the military when I was 17 years old. And my first day in my first unit, which, like you said, was 25th Infantry, was actually September 10th, 2001. So next day was 9/11. I woke up, did PT, my first real day in the Army, and went to the chow hall to eat breakfast and saw 9/11 happen on the TV. Mm. And needless to say, I spent much of the next decade fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. And just to give you a brief history on what my experience is. After coming home from Iraq in 2010, I started working as a civilian, as a intelligence analyst. So I did that for 4 years. And to be honest with you, I didn't like the office life. It wasn't for me, you know, coming from the infantry, kicking indoors and actually being on the ground, doing the fighting, moving to an office job, just it didn't do it for me. So I also, working as an intelligence analyst, learned a lot of things about my government and the government systems that I didn't like and that I didn't want to necessarily be a part of. So when the ISIS fight kicked off in Iraq in 2014, I felt it was my duty to go back to Iraq and fight ISIS because I'm a Christian. And what they were doing was ravaging Iraq and killing Christians just because they were Christians. So I went back to Iraq in 2014, fought ISIS for 2 years, and came home in 2016. And did what I wanted to do instead of what I had to do. And that was, I opened a food truck. And the reason why I opened a food truck is because I've always wanted to be a small business owner. And the reason for that is I believe that your paycheck should reflect how hard you work. And in being a small business owner, there's no more truth to your paycheck than how hard you work.
That's right.
And what I mean by that is, so working for the government or working, you know, a quote unquote regular job, you make the same amount of money every 2 weeks, no matter how hard you work or how hard you don't work. And to me, that's just not satisfying or gratifying because I'm a very hard worker and I'm very self-motivated. So what I love about small business is if you don't bust your ass, you're going to be broke. But if you bust your ass, you're going to reap the benefits. So I chose restaurants specifically because I love cooking. Even though I've never worked in a kitchen before, had no food experience, one of my biggest passions has always been cooking. And so I've always wanted to own my own restaurant. So like I said, I came home in 2016, opened a food truck, and I opened a food truck instead of a restaurant because I wanted to start small, prove my concept, make sure this was something I actually wanted to do before putting too much capital into it. Mm-hmm. And the food truck took off. It turned into two trucks, then three trucks. And then my wife and I opened the first restaurant version of Gore Melt in 2018, and that took off. We were doing very well. And then, as you know, March of 2020, COVID happened, and and that put the brakes on pretty much every small business here in the U.S. And that's when our fight at the restaurant began.
So everybody had their own experience during the COVID era, you might say, which isn't over yet. I still believe that they have another secret plague coming. But, you know, this is me with my tinfoil hat and knowing how these globalists think. Actually, all you got to do is listen to their words and you can understand. But what was it specifically that happened that caused you to say enough is enough and begin your fight with the local and state government?
Well, I'll tell you, when COVID first kicked off, I, like everybody else, had no idea what it was about. You know, I thought it was this virus that was going to kill half the world, like they were telling us. You know, so I took it seriously and I listened to the recommendations of shutting my restaurant down. So March of 2020, we actually shut down. And it was about 3 months later, June of 2020, when I truly began to realize that everything that was going on as far as the COVID mandates were more about control than they were our health and safety, because they just didn't make any sense. Mm. And me, before anything, I'm all about common sense. So if it doesn't make sense to me, something ain't right. You know, so for example, I'll tell you, they implemented mandates at my restaurant where I wasn't allowed to allow customers to sit at the bar, but I could pull a table up to the bar and they could sit at that table. My bartender, just ridiculous. My bartender couldn't serve a drink over the bar. So if you're sitting at the bar, my bartender's in front of you making a drink, the bartender had to walk around the bar and serve it to the customer side by side instead of passing it over the bar. I had to, so, and then they came in and they said, you know, you need to put up these plexiglass barriers, the barriers we see in every store now. Mm-hmm. And so I started questioning them. I said, well, what are the regulations on these barriers? How tall did they have to be? How wide did they have to be? And the OSHA inspector said, it needs to be from floor to ceiling. And I said, well, if you look at my roof, if I put it floor to ceiling, I'm going to be blocking these fire sprinklers. So are you telling me that I need to ignore these fire safety regulations in order to please you and your COVID regulations? And he said, well, don't violate any fire safety regulations. Just put it as high as you can get it. And I said, well, listen, these mandates are ridiculous. And I'm not going to go off of as high as I can get it. I want to know what the regulations are. I want you to tell me what it says in the book. And he says, well, the regulation is floor to ceiling. I said, okay, so if I follow the regulations, I'm violating the fire safety regulations. He said, yeah, but I don't want you to violate. So we just kept going back and forth. He had no answer for me. So I said, okay, well, how wide does the plexiglass have to be? And he said, actually, there's no regulation. I said, so if I put a 1-inch strip, I'm technically within regulation. And he said, yeah, technically you'll be in regulation. And I said, okay, well, listen, man, take a step back for a minute and take your OSHA hat off and just talk to me like a man to man. Does that make any sense to you? And his words back to me were, it doesn't have to make any sense. That's what the regulation is. So you either comply or we'll suspend your health department license.
Now, is this the local government or?
Yeah, this is the state of OSHA. So there's a state organization called Virginia Occupation Safety and Health.
Okay.
Which is basically the little brother of OSHA, which is a federal organization.
Yeah.
So they can do things on the state level under the guise of, hey, we're a state program, but really they're a federal program. So it's basically the federal government having oversight on state issues under the disguise of we're doing it as a state organization. You know what I mean?
It sounds unconstitutional.
Exactly. So I basically told him, I said, hey, listen, these mandates make no sense. They violate my customers' constitutional rights, so therefore I'm not going to follow them. And he said, well, if you don't, we'll be back in here to suspend your health department license. And I said, sir, you do what you got to do, and I'm going to do what I have to do. But if you don't leave my property right now, we'll have you arrested for trespassing. So he left. And he came back a couple weeks later and served me with the suspension papers, suspending my health department license. And that didn't change a thing of what we did. We kept on selling food. We stayed open, business as usual. And we afforded our customers their constitutional rights. Never enforced any mask mandate. Never put a piece of plexiglass up. And we always allowed our customers to sit at the bar. So we fought it all the way, and me fighting it, it made the former governor of Virginia and the former attorney general look stupid. Mm-hmm. So what they did is they filed what's called an injunction against me. And that is them asking the circuit court judge to shut me down under the regulation that I am an imminent and substantial threat to the community. So that was their words in the petition. So we went to court for that, and the judge sided with me. The judge said they didn't prove that I was an imminent and substantial threat to the community just by being open, and he denied their request for an injunction. So in a sense, we won. We proved that these mandates were unconstitutional, and they had to give me my health department license back.
That's great.
So in Virginia, your health department license is connected to your ABC license. So if you don't have a health department license, you don't have an ABC license. So when they suspended my health department license, in effect, my ABC license was suspended. So they didn't want me to serve alcohol either.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, I kept serving alcohol. The ABC, they still haven't given me my ABC license back yet, still to this day. But still to this day, I'm still serving alcohol. I'm still following all of the rules and regulations that I agreed to when I opened my restaurant, and I always have.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm not going to follow are unconstitutional mandates. I'll never follow those. I'll always stand up and fight back against them, no matter the cost. And that's so we're continuing to do that today. They won't give me my ABC license back, but I'm also not going to stop selling alcohol.
Now, how can you do that without having their blessing on alcohol sales? Because the state controls all of that, just like tobacco.
Exactly. Well, they told me they're not going to give me my ABC license back because I operated without a valid ABC license. And I said, yeah, but the only reason I operated without a valid ABC license is because you illegally and unconstitutionally took it away from me. So therefore, I'm going to stand up for my constitutional rights, and I'm going to continue to sell alcohol. And that's what you have to do to the government. When they stand up and they overreach, they overstep the regulations that they're supposed to stay within, as citizens, as patriots, as Americans, our duty, not our right, but our duty is to stand up and fight back. Because people, and I get this question all the time, people always ask me, aren't you scared? You're fighting against the big bad government. I mean, doesn't that make you nervous, man? You can't beat the government. And my response to them is always, not at all. It should be the other way around. The government should be scared of us.
Exactly.
There's way more of us. We control the government. We control this country, or at least we're supposed to. And so the government should be working for us, and they should be scared of us, not the other way around. And until more people step up and fight back against unconstitutional mandates like this, we'll continue to lose. But when we all stand up in unison to fight together, that's when we'll win.
Well, technically, we are the government. And these people that are employed in government agencies are working for us. And the politicians, even though they think they are leaders, which they're not, they think that they are in charge of us and better than us. And that's the problem that we have today in America. We have politicians who forget who put them there and why. And they go up there, they make, you know, tons of money. Like Nancy Pelosi is worth over, I think, $600 million, and we don't even know what her husband has because he's got all these federal contracts. And Uncle Joe Biden, he's so corrupt from his illegal dealings through his son and others. These people, they are more corrupt, and it's just not at the federal level. It's down at the state and local level as well. There's people that are acting as tyrants, like this health inspector who came to you and gave you a stupid mandate that wasn't even a regulation. It just boggles my mind. And once the public heard about your situation, what happened?
Well, my wife and I, when we made the decision to stand up and fight back, we had no idea which way it would go, you know, because you always feel like you're alone in situations like this. You know, you feel like you're the only one that sees the common sense solution to all of the madness going on. You feel like you're the only one that's not crazy. So you don't know which way it's going to go. But we made the decision, and the very next day when it became public, the amount of support and love that the community showed us, and not just locally here, not just Virginia, but nationwide, the support was out of this world, and it was overwhelming. And it reassured me that, hey, as far as America goes, we're going to be okay. There's a lot more like-minded people than I thought, and there's a lot more people willing to stand up than I thought. We're going to be okay. The problem is most people don't have a platform to stand on, you know, so they need people like small business owners, like myself, to stand up, and they need a cause like what we have going on to get behind and help fight. So they were very happy when I stood up and I fought back, and they got behind me, they supported me, and I truly believe that it was because of the community support that we won in court. You know, I think the judge, I think the police, I think the politicians, they heard what the community was saying. They saw how much support we had in the restaurant every day, and they had no choice but to decide the way they did because it's what the people want. And like you just said, these choices and these votes on legislation is not these politicians or these judges' choice and votes. It's the people's votes. So I think they, in my case, they saw what was happening. They saw the amount of support that we were getting, and they had no choice but to rule in our favor, because if they didn't, it would have heated up even more, because we're not going to back down. And I know the people that stand behind us, they weren't going to back down either. And we never will. So it was truly us coming together as Americans that made happen what happened.
Yeah. Well, my wife and a couple girlfriends went to your restaurant when it first came out about what had happened. And she told me that there was overwhelming numbers there, that it was just wild. And I was very happy. I was working out of town at the time, so I didn't participate. But we have been there since. You have a great restaurant and very unique clientele. I mean, it seems like everybody in there is happy and very friendly. So you've got a good thing there. So what is next for you, though? You know, you've kind of staved off the assaults of government for a while, and you know, it sounds like it's not over. There's still some things to go. And you know, what is your next step? And then what is your plans for the future?
Well, I tell you that it's not over. We are still fighting, and we're not going to stop fighting. It's time for us as patriots to stop being on the defensive and waiting for something to happen to fight back. It's time for us to go on the offense and fight for our country and make sure things like this doesn't happen. The one thing I was disappointed in when I went through the fight that I went through at the restaurant is that no local politicians stepped up to fight with me. And it really disappointed me, because I reached out several times to them and nobody reached back out until after we won. Then they wanted to come take pictures with me and present me with flags and awards. And I respectfully declined all of them.
Yeah.
And it just made me realize that these people took these positions of power because we allowed it to happen. Guys like me, who I spent my almost entire adult life, I sacrificed it for my country, fighting overseas. I spent many years away from my family in order to make America a better place. So when I came home, I just wanted to build a small business and spend the time that I lost with my family. And I wasn't really connected with politics. I hate politicians. I don't like politics. And I've always been as far away from it as I can be, because I don't trust anybody in that world. But it was because of people like me who didn't want to be a part of politics that these people were allowed to take these seats and screw this country up and screw this state up as much as they've done.
You're right.
So what I realized is that unless people like myself, who don't want to be politicians, step up and take these seats, nothing will change. So I was asked by a few different conservative organizations and a lot of people to step up and take a seat. And I thought about it. I talked to my wife about it. And I finally said, you know what? I'll do it. What seat do you need me to run for? And the overwhelming majority told me they needed me to run for the state Senate seat. So I'm now running for state Senate here in Virginia, and more specifically, District 27, which encompasses Spotsylvania, Fredericksburg, and Stafford. And the reason I chose state Senate is because, like you said, there's a lot of corruption going on within the government system. It's not just at the federal level. And I noticed that even at the state level, the state legislators have so much influence over even the federal election.
Yeah.
That people need to truly be focused on their local and state politics way more than they are.
Yes.
And so now I'm running for state Senate, and we're going to take this seat. We're going to win this seat. And I'm going to show these criminal politicians what leadership looks like. And I'm going to show them how to represent the people.
That's awesome. And hopefully you will expose some of the corruption that's going on up there too, because there's a good old boy network up there, and everybody is mum about what's going on with their fellow people, you know, whatever, whether it's in the House of Delegates or in the Senate. They're usually mum about any corruption that they see, which is unfortunate.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the main problem is these people, they make decisions and they make friends in order for them to have more personal political gain. Their whole goal is to become as rich as possible.
Yeah.
Their whole goal is to either keep that seat or move up to another seat. And that's how we get to where we are as a state and as a country. And my whole goal, I don't give a damn about being a state senator. I don't give a damn about being a politician. I'm not going down to Richmond to make any friends. My whole goal is to go down there and blow this system up, expose everybody that needs to be exposed, and represent for the people. That's all I give a damn about.
Oh, that's good. So you also had an audience with the Attorney General recently, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just wanting to get that in there because, you know, your battle at the restaurant's still not over, because even though we've had a change of ownership, so to speak, change of power in Richmond, we're still not necessarily fixed. You still have an issue that the state can address, but has not done so yet.
Correct. And that is the ABC issue. So the ABC issue that I talked about is prosecuted by the Attorney General's office. And the conversation we had with the Attorney General's office was about our court date. So we've got a court date coming up April 11th, and that is for an appeal to my ABC license suspension. The Attorney General's office was, they were offering me different settlements. So they said, hey, instead of paying these thousands upon thousands of dollars of fines that we hit you with, and these months of suspensions that we've hit you with, we'll take it down to no suspensions, and you just pay us $2,000. And I said, I'm not paying a dime. I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't violate any regulations. I'm not paying you guys a dime. And so we're waiting to hear back to see what they say. But they've offered me many settlements, and I'm not taking any settlement. I have no problem with going to court. You know, hopefully the judge doesn't rule the wrong way. But if he does, we'll keep fighting. I mean, I would not bow down. I would not settle at all. Either they're going to afford me my rights, or I'm going to take my rights.
Airborne all the way, right, brother?
Right, brother. Always.
Man. Well, we need more people like you fighting in the political realm, and even fighting against this tyrannical government at any level. There's, you know, just like in the fight for Second Amendment, this fake administration is trying to come up with new ways of violating our rights. And, you know, I'm along the lines of, I shall not comply.
You and me both. And it's not because you have that right. It's because you have that duty.
That's right.
The duty to, you have that duty to the people who gave their life for the values that this country was built on to not comply. That is your duty. Not just your right, but your duty. Those men and women, they died for you and me to still have the freedom to fight back. So it's our duty, mm-hmm, and our obligation to those people who gave their life to fight back. So that's how I look at it. It's not a choice, not a right. That's a mm-hmm. It's my God. It's my duty. I have to fight back for the people who have also fought back and paid the ultimate price for doing so. I mean, I've been ready to die for this country since I was 17 years old, and that hasn't changed. I'm still ready to die for it.
Well, I first took the oath in October of 1977 when I went into the Army.
Wow.
And I've taken it numerous times since then, in reenlistments and in active guard and reserve, and when I became a federal officer with Border Patrol and then ICE. So I've spent my adult life in the service of this nation, in the protection of our rights, and I'm going to keep my oath. There's no way I'm going to bow down to any tyrannical, unconstitutional mandates or government. This is this is something that we have to fix. I believe there's plenty of evidence out there, and now just one piece of evidence about the Hunter Biden laptop is proven what we've always said for last year and some months, that it's true. Well, New York Times said it's true, and there's other things that are going to come out that are proving us right, and all the lies that the deep state and the corrupt politicians and media have been hiding. So, you know, the truth's on our side. We just have to stand up and represent it.
You are exactly right, and I appreciate you for saying that.
So, do you have any final thoughts that you want to get across to our friends out there?
Well, I just want to thank everybody for being true patriots and for standing for the value system that this country was built on. And I just want to say not to get discouraged, because it may seem doom and gloom like our country and our world, for that matter, is heading down the wrong path. But there's enough of us patriots that are willing to step up and turn things around and make some much needed changes and make them fast. So we're coming. The patriots are on the way. Just get behind us and support us.
Yeah. As soon as the water gets hot enough, the frogs will jump. That's for sure.
That's right.
So that'll have to be the last word. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps to reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Notice I say it in partnership. We're not part of the government. We are a civil defense organization as a nonprofit that partners with the government, just like every other non-governmental organization does. Because if you're part of the government, they can always shut you down. If you're a grassroots organization, they cannot shut you down. So let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings at Facebook, Telegram, MeWe, and YouTube Civil Defense Podcast. Remember, on YouTube, it's Civil Defense Podcast. So I just started posting there again, and we're going to try and get one there at least once a month, maybe more. So most of the items we post, important information about the many threats we see to our safety and security as a nation. However, I do post some political and some funny things, the political, because politics matters. This story right here with Matt Strickland is one of the reasons why politics are a threat. So I wish to thank Matt Strickland again for being part of our show, and you, our American and international friends who listen to us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.